The Writer's Dish is one of our newer podcasts. The segment visits with people in the region's literary community to explore the work of writing and publishing. Today, host Amy Miller, a writer and publisher herself, explores the world of creative nonfiction with Edwin Battistella, who for decades taught college students how to write and write well while practicing what he preached in his own books. Here are Amy and Ed.
Hello, and welcome to The Writer's Dish on Jefferson Public Radio, where we explore the world of writing and publishing. I'm your host, Amy Miller. Let's say you're writing a book of nonfiction, maybe something on a topic you're an expert on, current affairs or history, a memoir, maybe a cookbook. So nonfiction is a big, wide field in the world of book publishing, full of its own rules, niches, and challenges. Today, we'll be talking about what it's like to be a nonfiction author with today's guest, Edwin Battistella. Ed Battistella is an emeritus professor of English at Southern Oregon University in Ashland, Oregon, who has written 6 books of nonfiction. His books include one published in 2014 called Sorry About That, The Language of Public Apology, which analyzed how celebrities and politicians apologize for sexual abuse scandals and other public relations disasters. His latest book, Dangerous Crooked Scoundrels, Insulting the President from Washington to Trump, came out in 2020. Ed, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thanks. It's great to be one of the ingredients on the writer's dish.
All right. No one said that before, so you have coined that phrase. So, Ed, you've been interviewed many, many times about your book, Sorry About That, The Language of Public Apology. You were interviewed by a lot of big news outlets in the years after it was published. Pretty much any time a politician or celebrity had to apologize after getting busted for some kind of misconduct or scandal. You still get interviewed about public apologies 10 years after the book came out. But what I'd like to talk about first is the fact that although that book was a hit, you were not an overnight success, because Sorry About That was your 5th book. So I wonder if you can go back with us to your first book and talk about how you got it published. Like, did you have an agent? How did you find your first publisher? Did you have to shop the manuscript around for a while? What was it like for you to be a first-time author?
Oh, yeah, sort of going back in time. Well, I had this problem that was sort of bothering me since I was an undergrad student. And it was this sort of odd idea in what was called Prague School Structuralism. And I had a little grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities to investigate it. And I put together a proposal, a really sort of short proposal to the State University of New York Press, which had a new linguistic series. This was still the days when linguistics was new. And I sort of knew the editor there. And he said, well, you know, send me a manuscript. I'd like to see it. No agent. I think, wow. You know, beginning professors can't really, agents aren't really interested in them because they're untested and nobody knows if they write like professors or can write like real people.
Yeah. Do you think that's still the case? Do you think most professors going after their first book just have to kind of go in on their own?
Yeah, I think they have to find a publisher who's interested in the stuff they're doing.
Yeah.
And a good way to do that is to go to academic conferences because the publishers are all there and you can talk to them. If you're lucky, they'll buy you coffee.
then you're in.
And you can pitch an idea to them. And they say, well, yeah, send me a proposal.
Oh, great. So that's like the academic version of a big writers' conference or AWP or something like that.
Yeah, academic speed dating.
Perfect, which every author needs. You know, you've had other books in between that first book and Sorry About That. Sorry About That is probably your best-known book. I'm wondering if the ones in between sort of led from one thing to another. Like, can you talk about building a career in terms of does one book build onto another, or is it kind of like a try this or that, try, you know, a hit or miss kind of thing?
Yeah, they sort of build on one another and sort of don't. So the second book I did was about the same topic as the first one, only a kind of different angle. So the first one was about Prague School Structuralism. And then in the second book, I looked at how that influenced Noam Chomsky and generative grammar. Uh-huh. After that, I had tenure, so I could be a little more adventurous. So I wanted to do things that were more cultural studies kinds of things. And I... I had this idea. I had this title for a book, and the title came around in this odd sort of way. I was at a summer workshop, and one of my friends wrote a book about the trials of famous women criminals.
Oh.
And, you know, if you wrote that book, what would you call it?
Oh, let's see. I'd call it The Bad Word Trials.
Yeah, exactly. She called it The Logic of Women on Trial.
Okay.
Which is guaranteed to maybe sell to a couple of libraries. And, you know, we were having the little wine and cheese hour at the workshop, and somebody, it might have been me, said, you know, if you want this book to be a success, you need to call it Bad Girls.
Uh-huh.
And she refused because she didn't want to go that way. But I got this idea that, well, I should do a book called Bad Language. And that was one where I actually had the title before I had the book.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, well, what am I going to do? So I put together a proposal and a manuscript, and it all worked out.
So that was really something that you kind of got out of conversation, almost out of the zeitgeist kind of thing, rather than more of an academic approach to, you know, what research is interesting and what are we, you know, what do I want? What am I working on that I can write about?
Yeah, exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about what time it takes to do these books. Your work is fairly academic and contains a lot of academic in a good way. Contains a lot of references, I know, and a lot of historical pieces. Can you talk about research and writing time, like on the average, like how long do you think it took you to write each book?
I mean, you can do a draft in maybe a year, and then you send it off. You get some comments. Maybe you make some changes, you send it off. You might do that a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it actually goes into production, it's kind of like having a baby. It takes about 9 months for them to get it copy edited and set up and send the page proofs to you. And then you have like 2 weeks to, you know, read all that stuff and make an index and everything.
Make sure you don't go to Hawaii that.
Yeah, exactly. They want to know where you are at every moment.
So when you say you send it off, I'm assuming you're talking about sending it to the editors at the publisher that you already know is going to take this. Do you have beta readers or fact checkers or anybody who looks at it in the meantime?
No, you know, I've done more and more of that as I go along. One of the things that I've been doing is reading it aloud to myself just to say, oh, that really sounds stupid. I said that a minute ago. So I do that. I've sent it off to sort of close colleagues to look at, and my wife reads it. And, but I've gotten great feedback from editors. I'm sort of amazed. Some of them are just, you know, they seem like kids to me, but they're really sharp, and I've learned all sorts of things from them.
Uh-huh. Well, you're listening to The Writer's Dish on Jefferson Public Radio. I'm your host, Amy Miller, and today we're speaking with nonfiction author Edwin Battistella. Ed, all of your books were written and published while you were teaching, so presumably you were working very full-time at the same time, and you had quite a successful book with Sorry About That. What's it like to be a full-time professor while also having to do interviews to support a successful book? And this is after you took all that time to do the research and writing. Like, how did you make time for all of that?
Yeah, I didn't realize that you would have a whole second job, talking about the book and things like that. So it was occasionally you would get an interview request, have a full day of classes, and then, you know, have to rush in and think of something to say that you hadn't said before. So it could be a little hectic, but the more of it you do, the better you get it. It's just kind of, you know, finding the right examples. The tricky thing for me with that was occasionally I would get a request to comment on some apology that had just happened in the news.
Right.
And I would have to rush out and see, well, what the heck did they say?
Oh, and what did they do and all that, right? Have to get a little background and see how they did.
So the good interviewers would send me a couple of links to the news articles so I could take a look at it.
Gosh, and I would imagine they would want to comment like by the next morning or something,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So you published your last several books with Oxford University Press. Can you talk a little bit about that relationship and that process? Like, do you have a multi-book agreement with them? Do they have right of first refusal? And do you have any say in things like book design and cover design, marketing, that kind of thing?
Oh, yeah, I don't have a multi-book deal. I don't think the university presses tend not to do that, but they have the sort of right of first look for anything linguistic I do. So if I do something outside of that, if I write a mystery, they're they don't care. But the I have a little bit of say in marketing because they want to know, do you have a platform?
Right.
You know, who do you know? What conferences do you go to? Who might endorse the book? Things like that.
Yeah.
Cover design, a little bit less. They'll show you the cover, and if you hate it, you can say so. But
that's good.
I'm pretty easy. Mm-hmm. They know what they're doing more than I do. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I did have a funny, the cover of Sorry About That. Was mentioned in the New Yorker.
Oh, wow.
Because the artist who did the cover used the same design as a fiction book about called Public Apology, I think.
Oh.
And then I get this call one day from an author. The author of that book said, hey, did you design the cover of this? I'm like, no, man. I leave that to the professionals.
Uh-huh.
And I gave him the editor's number, and he talked to her, and it turned out to be one of those art school meme things where everybody had, you know, gone to the same class, and they were all doing the same.
Oh,
you know,
it was oh, gotcha.
Airplane
a
pulling
style.
Out. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So he knew a writer at the New Yorker, and they did a little blurb on
wow.
the coincidence, and then all my old friends' mothers called me and said, "Oh, I
oh,
saw
sure.
you in the New Yorker."
Any publicity is good publicity.
That's what my grandmother used to say.
Perfect. Talk a little bit about nonfiction book proposals. Do you have to put together a proposal for every book that you do with comparative titles and research on the market and all that kind of thing?
I do. It takes about, you know, anywhere from 12 to 20 pages, sort of, you know, starting off by what's the hook? Why is this book interesting to
mm-hmm.
them?
Why this book now kind of thing.
Why this book now,
yeah.
exactly. And it's really, the audience is in part the editor you're going to work with who wants to see if you have a sort of coherent idea for the book, and part the marketing team.
Oh.
Because when they approve it, they have to sort of run it by marketing. And if they don't think they can sell it, they're not going to invest a lot of resources into it.
And they have to understand it, too.
Yeah, they have to
right?
understand it.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that one of the editors I worked with told me last time was, oh, don't say linguistics, say language science.
Oh, uh-huh.
That's more accessible.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That makes
right.
sense.
Right.
So little things like that. The comparative analysis, I sort of do that by looking at Amazon.
Oh, see. It's a lot easier now than it
oh,
used
yeah.
to be. Right. You got the numbers right there.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. So do you have any advice for somebody who's got a nonfiction book idea out there or even a manuscript that they think is all ready to go? Like, how do they break into that market? Let's say maybe not somebody who's not in academia. You know, do you advise them to find an agent first? Any pitfalls that they should look out for?
Well, I think the most important thing is just to have a little bit of stubbornness.
Ah,
so
persistence.
So that you don't, if the editors or agents don't like it or they don't respond, you know, don't get too discouraged.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I found is that you know, the university presses used to have this kind of Maxwell Perkins thing where you would work with the same person for their
oh,
whole career
sure.
and they would kind of adopt you.
Yeah.
Now there's a lot more churn in there and the editors are way overworked.
Uh-huh.
So sometimes you feel like they're ghosting you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really just often that they're too busy.
Yeah.
So, you know, not taking any rejections mm-hmm. or...
And follow up, right?
Yeah, like follow up.
Didn't hear from
you. Know,
yeah.
I send the little note saying, I just want to make sure you got my email and it wasn't in your spam. And then, you know, another month, hope I'm not being a nag.
Yeah.
But so
yeah.
things like that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's being a good author and being kind to your editor or your potential editors is very important because it's all about relationship building in there. And you might see those people again
exactly.
the next time around. Well, Ed, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Yeah, it's been great. I hope I've been a good part of the dish.
You have. Thanks for being a great ingredient.
All right. Good luck with the show.
Thank you. You've been listening to The Writer's Dish, JPR's regional writing and publishing podcast. You can find this program and more on our website at jeffexchange.org or subscribe to Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.